Bad news.
Bad news for the state.
Bad news for capital.
Bad news for patriarchy.
Bad news for all forms of domination.
Bad news. Angry voices from around the world.
Our monthly info show from anarchist and anti-authoritarian radio projects worldwide.
If these news are bad, I don't want to be good.
Hello all, here is Bad News 33 episode by the A Radio Network. In this report, we're listening the angry voices of Terna Lukna, sharing a thought on how does coronavirus influence the society and thoughts on how to intervene politically in state of emergency, from Federation for Anarchist Organizing from Slovenia and part of Croatia. 105 FM, Mytilene, Lesbos, for the general situation in Lesbos, situation in Moria camp, and hunger strike in Moria's prison. The Final Straw Radio, sharing a short description of recent COVID-19 subjects in the US, and some commentary by anarchist prisoner Sean Swain on how to make it through isolation more safely. Radio Zones of Subversive Expression, Athens, with updates and news from Athens. A Radio Berlin on a commentary about the global situation these days. Free Social Radio, 14:31 AM, Thessaloniki, or 14:31, about the cut of power supply in Viomed, an occupied and self-organized factory in Thessaloniki, movements and struggles in prisons during the quarantine and coronavirus, repression in so-called Greece during the quarantine and coronavirus, arrests of Kurdish and Turkish comrades in Athens, evictions of migrants' home squads. Dissident Island, London, focuses on issues around housing in the UK, discussing moves the state has made to protect landlords, the lip service paid to renters and homeless folk, and the self-organized solutions that are emerging through rent strike and mutual aid groups. Frequenza, with an interview with somebody of the anarchist network Dresden, Germany, about their initiative in their neighborhood during the COVID-19 crisis. Radiofragmata, Athens, with an introduction on the social-political situation and struggles in Greek territory.
No bastard ever came home from earning $8.25 an hour feeling proud. Minimum wage, just a fancy term for industrialized slavery. We're in a war with the privileged. Those aren't streets you're sitting on, they're battlefields. And it is our duty to fight the comfortable and the overfed. So go forth, you sons of bitches.
Iz bojišč razredne vojne poruča Črna luknja.
Hello, comrades from all around the world. We are members of Federation for Anarchist Organizing in Slovenia and part of Croatia.
Like elsewhere throughout the world, what started as a global pandemic of coronavirus is turning into an authoritarian assault by the state on the general population. Also in Slovenia, we are witnessing increasing police powers, we are witnessing total ban on any public gathering and political meetings, we are witnessing criminalization of individual protests against measures of police, we are witnessing on one side mass unemployment and on the other side forced labor in unhealthy conditions.
So maybe now it is even more important than before that we are organized in our political collectives and that we force our actions from these directions out. It is time maybe to work more into the affinity groups. It is time for direct and other kinds of communication actions. It is important not to be only on the internet, but that our activities are still based in the real life, in real society, in our districts, in our streets. So maybe it is harder than before to accumulate greater power with our bodies, but we can resist with dispersed smaller actions.
While it is totally understandable that we have to treat the health emergency in a very serious way, it is also crucial that we start to see the reactions from the states throughout the world for what they are. They are assault on our liberties, assault on our working conditions, assault on our rights that have absolutely nothing to do with the health emergency. So while we support all the responsible social measures of health professionals and general public throughout the world, we are also very much in total opposition to any authoritarian moves taken by the Slovenian state, Slovenian police and military.
And of course, we mustn't forget on solidarity. We have to create a solidarity network, we have to take care for our comrades. In these times of police state, in times of total control, and in times when the economical crisis is on horizon, it is even more important to build self-solidarity, self-managed and self-supportive networks.
What's a revolution to you? To kill their bosses and take their money.
Revolution! Revolution!
Dobro jebate, kak ti možeš u jednoj demokratskoj državi dizat narod na ustanak?
This is 105 FM, self-organized radio from Mytilene, Greece.
Before we start, we want to inform you that because of the quarantine, there is a lack of communication with the refugees, so some details may differ.
Morning of March 1st, fascists have set up blockades in the entrances of the village of Moria, preventing refugees from going to the camp. While a boat was approaching the port of Thermi, a village on East Lesbos, fascists had gathered to prevent the refugees going on land. They threatened them through plastic bottles and kicked the boat, trying to push it back in the sea. They also threatened journalists and solidarity people. They injured a journalist seriously and threw his equipment in the sea. After some hours, the refugees were rescued by the port police, which all this time was idle. Meanwhile, in Sekamnia, a village in the north of Lesbos, where there is a small infrastructure to help refugees who have just arrived, called Stage 2, is burned down by fascists. Refugees who arrived this night, as well as the next few days, were taken to the port of Mytilene as the roads leading to Moria camp were blocked by fascists. They slept in buses provided by the port police. The following day, there was a demonstration of refugees at the camp of Moria, and the cops used tear gas to disperse the crowd. At night, about 1,000 people started from the camp heading to the port of Mytilene, as there was a rumor about ships wanting to take them to Athens. The cops blocked them before they could enter the city and led them back to the camp. It must be noted that by government's order, people who would arrive from March 1st would not be able to apply for asylum. This means that they would be taken to camps to the mainland, awaiting deportation back to Turkey. On April 7th, the government withdrew their decision due to international pressure. March 3rd, a military transport ship is being used as a shelter for families of refugees that had arrived from March 1st. March 5th, members of the fascist organization Identity Movement arrive in Mytilene. One of them is Mario Müller, member of the neo-Nazi organization Kontrakultur Halle. The next day, they are spotted on a major road of Mytilene, pretending to be journalists. They were beaten and taken to the hospital. March 7th, the refugee school of one happy family located near Mytilene is set on fire by fascists. On the same day, Rowan Croft, an Irish fascist, is beaten up by anti-fascists while live broadcasting on social media. March 14th, the military transport ship, which we talked about earlier, takes everyone that was living inside to the mainland. After the ship was gone, people that had already been living at the port for more than 10 days were taken to Karatepe, an area near Mytilene. There, an abandoned building is being used to quarantine refugees who had just arrived for 14 days. The use of this place as a way to quarantine newcomers is denied by the municipality. They said that the people living there are to soon be deported. 25 people have been living there for more than 14 days up to this day. Since March 14th, about 130 refugees have been scattered in three groups in places in North Lesbos due to the fact that they can't be taken to the mainland because of COVID-19. Because the government has decided to quarantine newcomers for 14 days at the place where they made it ashore, and because no municipality is providing any place for them to stay, they are left out in the middle of nowhere. There are people sleeping out in the open, unprotected from the rain and the cold. Despite the movement limitations, Solidaris have been trying to provide them with sleeping bags and tents. On a village of Lesbos, fascists threatened the refugees and did not allow them to set up their tents. As a result, they slept in the mud and under the cover of the wrecks of previous boats. March 16th, a fire broke out at the camp of Moria, killing a 6-year-old child. These days, illegal pushbacks of refugees are occurring by the port police. Whenever they are spotted, refugees are being driven into lifeboats and sent back to the sea so as to be picked up by the Turkish Coast Guard or to wash up on the Turkish coasts. Two confirmed cases have occurred, one on March 13th at Chios and one on April 1st on Samos. More refugees are being checked by the police than locals. The fines will be subtracted by the monthly allowance. Moreover, there was a discussion about not paying them until ATMs would be installed in Moria to prevent excess movement. Up until the day that this news report is being written, none of them have gotten paid yet. April 5th, prisoners of Prokeka in Moria have started a hunger strike. They demand immediate release and to be taken to a safe place due to the dangers of COVID-19 spreading in the prison. Quoting their words, "Every jail in the world has released its prisoners. We decide to choose between our freedom or death." Some of them are saying that the cops threatened them and beat one of them. So as to protest even further, four of them stitched their mouths. A doctor was called to remove the stitches by force. On April 8th, the hunger strike ended. They also said that the cops made them eat breakfast by force. The situation at Prokeka in Moria is awful. There is lack of medical and psychological support. They won't let them come in contact with the outside world, and there is a serious lack of food. At alongside the demeaning policy of the states that have a say in the refugee crisis, things are getting worse and worse for the refugees. People are imprisoned in Prokeka not because they have committed a crime in the camp, but because they come from countries that less than 25% of the populations are refugees. Having reached their limit, many people have tried to demonstrate for their demands, but this has only caused mass oppression by the cops. Their lives have not changed for the better. The only change there is the climax of police brutality. Taking advantage of the fact that they are relatives, family owners, and have lived in the island for a long time, and using the local population's frustration as a stepping stone, fascists have managed to take most of the local population on their side. All this is of course happening with the support of the cops, who either stay idle or even covering them up due to similar political ideologies or due to being relatives and friends. Because of the limitation of movement, our actions are also limited. We can't get on the streets to demonstrate and fight, and this fits perfectly with the plans of the state. With all this panic, as a result of COVID-19, state, cops and local fascists have found the opening to do whatever they want with the lives of the refugees. The government is using the pandemic to further contain the refugees in more temporary camps, which could very easily turn to permanent in the future. The refugees, being second-class citizens, are left on their own, facing the fascists, abandoned in empty buildings or imprisoned in Moria camp, having no access to money, water and electricity. Being protected from COVID-19 and other infectious diseases, something that is given for the local population, is an abstract reality for the refugees. Solidarity to the cause of the refugees. Immediate release to the imprisoned at the concentration camps.
Welcome to the Final Straw Radio's edition to Bad News for April 2020. I'm Burst's co-host and co-producer of the show. In considering what to offer for this portion of the show, I find myself a little overwhelmed, honestly. It must be said that opinions, events, and views from the so-called USA take up a lot of space internationally, which is sensible since we are the center of the universe. But that offers quite a challenge to an attempt at synopsizing the spread of the pandemic in this country. So, please bear with me. Or better yet, I'm actually not going to try to do that, and I'll keep it mostly local. In the last 15 years, mutual aid organizing in this country has been slowly growing as an approach to natural disaster scenarios like fires, tornadoes, floods, hurricanes, and earthquakes, as well as unnatural disasters like chemical spills and increasing immigration raids by federal agents into our communities. Responding to crisis is nothing new to humans, but anarchists and autonomous engaging this alongside other elements of civil society as climate change ramps up is a trend worth noting. Because the government sure as shit isn't going to save our communities. Many of those approaches, lessons learned, relationships, and infrastructures we've been compiling are being integrated across wider networks as folks find themselves ordered to shelter in place without access to money, without food, cleaning gear, or medical care. Across the nation, we've seen the spreading of survival projects, collecting and distributing means of thrival, particularly to portions of the community most in need. Here in our little mountain town, we've reported on those efforts these last few weeks when we've talked to people from Asheville Survival Program or our mountain neighbors in rural organizing and resilience. Food distribution networks like these work to supplement existing community food pantries and food banks that churches and community groups already operate around the country, or to fill in gaps when those don't already exist. We spoke with David Forbes of Asheville Survival Program and Matt of Rural Organizing and Resilience in our April 5th episode. With shelter-in-place orders imposed by the government, much of the economy at a standstill, and so many people in this country living paycheck to paycheck, rent and bank payments become untenable for many, if they weren't already. Landlords are attempting to continue feeding off their tenants despite one-third of the nation's workers being unemployed and with no immediate relief in sight. and people without housing face increased scrutiny and harassment by law enforcement as the pitiable existing sanitation, health, and addiction services offered are forced to close. Here, a housing union called Unemployed Humans Organizing Help, or UHO, has been attempting to help tenants communicate and coordinate to resist attempts at bullying renters into future debt to landlords for pandemic times. UHO has also been trying to press local government and hotels to open up empty rooms to houseless folks. Across the nation, autonomous tenant unions have been organizing and networked together to share resources. In light of the recent article in the Wall Street Journal noting that one-third of U.S. renters did not pay their rent on April 1st, it seems that May Day could be great if we coordinate correctly. Of note, the group Cooperation Jackson has called for a general strike across the country to build working-class dual power. We spoke recently to folks from UHO in our April 12th episode about tenant organizing and houselessness in Asheville. And earlier than that, Julian of Tenants United of Hyde Park and Woodlawn in Chicago talked about their organizing efforts, which is present in our March 23rd episode. A third point of concern to many anarchists has been the mistreatment by the medical establishment of healthcare workers who are putting their lives on the line to stem the flow of the virus and treat those suffering its effects. Government and for-profit hospitals have been forcing medical staff to work insanely long hours without proper personal protective equipment, or PPE. Many community groups around the country have been pulling together to try to manufacture protective masks and sneeze guards, sew cloth masks, manufacture COVID-19 tests, and ventilators to support frontline workers and those who are helping in the community. We spoke with Bill from Indie Lab about hacker attempts to fill in the gaps of the medical industry in our March 23rd episode. Yet another thing to touch on is how the pandemic and economic retraction are affecting communities across the so-called U.S. by pointing out that the U.S. has the largest population of prisoners in the world, proportionally and numerically. As with everything else in this country, the demographics of these populations show high proportions of people with darker skin because the society is white supremacist, poor people because capitalism fails the poor, and people with neurodivergence and addiction issues because we have scant public health care infrastructure and a wacky Protestant mentality. Prisons are unsanitary petri dishes where diseases run rampant, where health care is expensive and low quality where it does exist. Prisoners do not have access to cleaning materials or protective gear, and neither do their working class guards, even the unionized ones. Fuck all cops. Because poverty and racialization already negatively affect health outcomes, we can expect jails, ICE detention facilities, state and federal prisons to be the sites of mass death, as we have already seen a taste of in the infamous Rikers Island in New York. To hear a number of voices, including activists, prisoners, and healthcare workers on the topic, you can hear our March 22nd episode. Or you can look at how it's specifically going to affect and is affecting institutions and prisons in North Carolina by hearing the March 29th show. I'd like to close the segment with extended audio from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain. No matter where you are in this time, you're likely cut off from your normal social life, isolated in quarantine. To help people out, Sean decided to share insights he gained from his 27 years in prison, and in particular from his 2 years in isolation in the Ohio prison system for his political beliefs. Sean gives us some clues about how to make it through isolation stronger than you went in. You can hear any of these episodes up at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org.
Okay, first things first. You gotta stay mentally organized. And staying mentally organized means living in a way that's organized. You need a routine. Routine is key to long-term segregation. You wanna get up in the morning at the same time. Set an alarm. Get up, get out of bed, make the bed. It doesn't matter that you have nowhere to go. It doesn't matter that you're not leaving that living space. You get up at the same time and you make the bed because the sleeping period is over. Create for yourself set times for eating your meals, or a small range of time for those meals to happen in. Set a time for showering or bathing and personal grooming. It doesn't matter that you're not going anywhere. Laying in bed all day in the same sweater and underwear from last Tuesday is not mental organization. It's surrender. Yes, I'm talking to you. No, you, there. Yes, the one in the sweater and the underwear. Break up your day into chunks. Fill those chunks with activity. Maybe you like to read. Designate a period of your day for reading. Designate another part of your day for writing. Another part for Skyping and Twitter and social interaction. Doing this gives you routine, but it also gives you benchmarks as you travel through your day. You can say to yourself, I've gotten this done, it's such and such a time, it's time to do X. You are now doing your time. Your time is not doing you. Your time will move faster. You'll get more accomplished. Which brings me to my next point, accomplishing. Each day provides you multiple opportunities to fulfill goals. Get something written. Get something read. Go a certain time on your stationary bike. Dispose of the body of that annoying next-door neighbor, former neighbor. Just kidding. Don't kill your neighbor. There are security cameras everywhere. I digress. Thing is, each day you meet some small goal, then another, then another. You take in calories, you move from activity to activity. Most importantly, you survive. Each day you end still breathing is a mission accomplished. You're not just writing emails or riding a stationary bike. You're fighting for your very survival, albeit in a mundane kind of way. Physical exercise. The human body is a machine made for motion, so move. My captivity workout, I do sets of push-ups, crunches, and squats, one set after another. It works major muscle groups, gets my heart pumping, gets me sucking oxygen, and helps me to think more clearly. It allows me to release tension. Now, more than ever, that's important, not just for your survival, but for the survival of your annoying neighbor. So get exercise, and whenever possible, in a way that's safe, try to get an hour of direct sunlight outdoors. Go outside and breathe deeply and feel sunlight on your face. It matters. Now, if you're all alone, you can organize your day however you want. You can modify your routine at will until it works for you. But if you're not alone, you have to synthesize your routine with the lives of those around you. Urge them to adopt the routine. Socially, it helps keep the peace. You know what everyone else is doing at given chunks of the day, and they know what you're doing. You want periods of solitude and periods of social interaction, time set aside for your own projects, and time for collective and communal activities. Through the course of this, you're going to experience heightened anxiety. It's easy to dwell on your own situation and let the worry spiral out of control. It's easy. We all do it. So what you do to get out of that spiral, you focus on the struggle of someone else. Get out of your own head. Contribute to someone else's plight. This isn't just some Mother Teresa kumbaya crap. It's not just some virtuous selflessness. It's a selfish act. It's motivated by your own desire to further your own survival. If you get out of your own head and help someone, you're exiting that spiral of anxiety. Some other tips. Well, it's good to do some planning for the future. Force yourself to stay grounded in the now. Daydreaming about when this is over just makes the now suck worse. A little of that can go a long way. Also, be realistic about how long this is. Don't wake up every day thinking we're all going to pour out into the streets like some sort of flash mob dance routine. It ain't happening. Probably for months. So get yourself into a comfortable routine for months. This is your reality. It is what it is. Also, when that reality feels overwhelming, remind yourself that this is just temporary. It will pass. Even if it takes for months, it doesn't take forever. Nothing is forever. Don't forget, however bad you've got it, others less capable than you have gotten through longer chunks of time and far worse conditions. I did a year with virtually nothing, on starvation rations, with very little soap, locked in a space the size of a bathroom with another poor bastard. We were both idiots, and yet we both survived. You will too. Resolve to survive this. Walk around your living space. Tell the walls, you won't defeat me. Tell your couch, you won't defeat me. Tell all your furnishings, you won't defeat me. Then look in the mirror and tell yourself, this won't defeat me. And mean it. You have two choices, flat out. You can survive this, or you can sit down on the curb, and sooner or later the dogs and the birds will eat you. It's your choice. I've made my choice. Hope I see you on the other side of this shit.
Keep healthy, y'all, and overgrow the state.
Hello from Athens in quarantine. This is Bad News for April 2020 by Radio Zones of Subversive Expression. Transmitting Chaos.
The lockdown started on the 14th of March under the motto Stay Home. Since then, the government attributes responsibilities over the spread of the virus on an individual level. Big enterprises continue to work employing workers under unsafe conditions. Others have stopped working without any insurance for their future, while tests for COVID-19 are only available for those who are in severe health state. The degraded public health system, after all those years of austerity practices, is in great need of equipment, employees, beds, and intensive care units. Public health workers are lifting the weight while being left exposed to COVID-19 by those who for years fantasized about private health system. Instead of investing in public health now, the government is keep making agreements with private clinics, charging the public. The government and the media are silencing down the health workers, and in the meantime they use propaganda, showing crowded photos of places and blaming the citizens. Exiting home is only permitted with phone messages, and the roads are controlled by the police, abusing their powers and giving fines even to homeless citizens. While the government has called state of emergency, public spaces are being privatized, 11 million are given to the media only for the stay-at-home campaign, cops impede solidarity actions and initiatives. There are reports of people left to die at their homes and not given access to the hospitals. Sick people in their mandatory army service, allegations of domestic violence are being silenced, refugees in hotspots and prisoners in outrageous and inhumane conditions are left alone and exposed to the virus. Now more than ever, all the fallacies of the state are being exposed, and the state keeps blaming each one of us. Detainees at the pre-departure detention center, Prokika, in Moria, Lesbos, have been on hunger strike since April the 5th, 2020. The strikers are demanding their immediate release to avoid the devastating effects of the outbreak in prison. Prisoned women in Thiva are revolting after the death of a woman in her early 30s inside the prison. Reports say that she had suspicious symptoms of COVID-19 and the prison didn't provide medicines or help. After her death, the revolt was suppressed by police forces in a prison where women with children are held.
Coronavirus, pandemic, social distancing, and panic buying. Of course, no one can avoid talking about COVID-19. As Anarchist Radio Berlin, we recorded a commentary directly from the channel of the dry throat.
In the channel of the dry throat. I had forgotten that I was still connected to the server when I heard your voice whisper out of the headset. Your nick was Eternal Solidarity One. I started a conversation while I watched the mold growing in the wallpaper. You talk about responsibility and reason. I emphasize that I talk about the same. Responsibility not because, but despite. You call it pandemic, special situation, a plea to all. In the front of the virus, we are all the same, humans. I call it flu. Special situation. National spectacle. Abolition of all rights, etc. Jail at home. Where we are not the same. The streets belong to the police. Precarious workers continue working. People without homes. Poor and now criminalized on the streets. In my inner eye, you are a ghast. Isn't it the core and the strength of our movement that we stay humane and not loyal to any principles? You pause. 500,000 dead just here. Can you understand that? Solidarity with the old and sick. I emphasize my astonishment. Where has this parole been a month ago? Solidarity with the old and sick. Who honestly cared about hospital beds being reduced who questioned two-class medicine, who fought the horribly underpaid work conditions of overstressed health workers, the elderly people with open wounds on their bodies because they are not even turned in bed often enough. My responsibility is more than ever to fight this system instead of staying at home and baking bread. That is my humanity. My statement is polemic in your eyes. All this is to be criticized. Later. As whatever verbal acrobat I present myself, the calculation is simple. Minimization of social contacts equals keeping the curve flat equals less deaths. How important have the rights been to me before? Now that I'm not allowed to go into some music club for some weeks, I complain about being suppressed. Exactly, I say. Let us stay with the calculation about social contacts and look at the reality and what the state does. I may not sit in the park for recreation, but on the train somebody still checks tickets. The sphere of labor is slightly restricted, not even bullshit jobs, but everything beyond becomes a prison. That is some kind of half-quarantine which hits the lower class most. Why would I constantly talk about prison? It is not the end of the world to stay at home for a while, especially in times of internet. That sounds like a privileged perspective to me. I describe my home, 8 expensive square meters in a Berlin backyard where the sun never shines. I tell about the yelling above us when the neighbor hits his wife. I mention the student who nobody knew and who ended up dead on the pavement. You talk about death, but do you know what happens if you lock people in their so-called homes? By far not everybody is this woman in Berlin, and for the others it is very simple to keep a distance, he responded. If the society was a bit more reasonable, which is it not, the movements of the right, etc., then there would be no need to lock anybody by law. It is especially the state, I think, who stops me from staying at home. How can I stay there if it prolongs its inhumane policies? Still houses get evicted. Still people get deported. In the shadow of the virus, the state increases its authoritarian and inhumane regime. If the state doesn't keep its henchmen at home, we still need to go out. You seem to become uncomfortable with the conversation. That is why it seems to me you turn things in an appeasable direction. The whole extent of self-organizing and mutual aid, which becomes visible, contains by itself the perspective of a solidarity society, especially since right propaganda currently seems to fail. I like this perspective, but I doubt how much of this solidarity society stays in place when the spectacle of national crisis ends and nothing remains than an even tougher society of competition, because the whole structures didn't change, at least not to the better. I giggle. The radical right. What can they even call for if the democratic parties already proclaim police state? You try to say something more, but I cannot understand. It cracks, then you disappear.
On March 20th, the inmates of the women's and men's prisons of Korydallos, Laris and Chania started mobilizations with demands regarding the preventive measures to deal with coronary heart disease. By submitting a memorandum to the ministry and warning of the deadly effects that a possible transmission of the virus may have inside the prisons, they refused to be locked in their cells. With the start of the pandemic, the only measures taken by the state were to ban visits, to send food, clothes, books, etc., and to ban meetings with lawyers and relatives. At the same time, the imposition of 24-hour indefinite confinement on cells as a measure of protection against the virus, as well as the use of it in Korydallos prison, as a wing for these infected with an abandoned and suitable building, especially for people with respiratory diseases such as coronavirus infection. The detainees of the mobilized prisons made the following demands: precautionary measures for the risk of spreading the epidemic in prisons, decongestions of prison, release from prisons under Article 105 and 110 of the Penal Code, release of prisoners with small sentences and a short sentence, release of patients, pregnant women, etc. In response to the mobilizations, the Ministry responds with a sudden and vindictive transfer of the member of EA Polas Rupa on 20th of March to the prisons of Thiv and of Nikos Masiotis on 24th of March to the prisons of Thermoku. Also, on 30 March, the Penitentiary Service of the Detention Center of Chania responded with repression, which carried on an investigation to the third wing, wearing hoods and destroying the cells of the prisoners in retaliation. For 2 days, half of the cells of the C1 wing were kept closed as a disciplinary sanction for allegedly prohibited items in their possession. The detainees refused to receive the food while they were locked up. There is a serious health problem for detention centers across the country. Specifically, in the Larsa prisons, about 800 detainees are stacked where the capacity is much smaller. On Monday, March 30, the detainees began escalation protests, keeping the prisons open during the noon count until the ministry's official response. In Korydallos prison, while basic rights of detainees have been suspended, such as the planned few days leave and visits, at the same time, gloves and masks have not been distributed, while the wings have been supplied with the rest of the necessities, phone cards, cigarettes, food, without any protection. On April 9th, the women inmates at Eleonas Thieves, the women's prison, revolted after the death of a 42-year-old inmate, Adizel Demiroglu, who belonged to a vulnerable group as she was suffering from heart problems. However, the prison service ignored her strong protest against heart pain, depriving her of the right to access medical care, causing her to die locked in the room of the fifth ward in front of 20 detainees. The detainees reacted by setting fire to mattresses and clothes. In order to prevent the spread of the uprising in all the wings of the prison, the ministry sent the mat that drowned them in tears, while they did not hesitate to hit them widely, breaking arms, legs and ribs, sending many of them to the hospital. The Secretary General of the Anti-Crime Policy, S. Nicolaou, has stated to challenge the uprising and the causes of death, making untrue and a provocative statement about the conditions of detention of the detainees, while rushing the falsery, denounced the end of the uprising, downplaying its extent and stating that there was no police intervention in the prison. She did not even hesitate to draw her own conclusions about the causes of the prisoner's death without having the official medical forensic examination. Despite the violent repressions and beatings, the detainees decided to continue their protests, keeping the prisons open during the evening hours, which led to the re-attack of the uniformed assassins who stormed the cells, drowning them and beating them mercilessly. They even beat an epileptic prisoner who is receiving strong medication severely on the head and all over her body. On the 19th of March, the anti-terrorist police broke into the office of People's Front and the Imperialistic Front, the legal representative organization of the DHKPC in foreign countries, and the house in Sepolia. The police destroyed the office, making the continuance of their projects impossible, stole an amount of money from their collective fund, which is essential for their living, and their computers, cameras and all the technical support were also taken. 26 of the comrades were forcibly captured. 15 of them were set free with no accusations, and 11 of them were arrested with accusations for terror organization. On the 24th of March, they were examined by the prosecutor for taking part in terrorist organization, possession of weapon, and some other misdemeanors. They were all taken into custody in different prisons around Greece. On the 15th of March, police evicted the occupied building of Gini at the Faculty of Engineering, Athens. The building was occupied by refugees and migrants in November, after the eviction of a squatted building they were stayed, denying to go to concentration camps. The cops broke into it, saying that coronavirus was the main reason of the eviction. While the coronavirus is spreading, the whole country is currently in quarantine since the 23rd of March. We can only go out for certain reasons announced by the government. If we get caught outside of any other reason, we get a fine penalty of at least 150 euros. Also, in some cities where there are a lot of coronavirus cases, there is a complete lockdown. The police has even fined homeless people for being outside. Also, the church secretly continues giving communion to some whisperers and their kids, making the situation even worse for everyone, but no penalties or legal charges have been pressed against them. Diome is the only self-managed factory in Greece, working like this since February 2013, mostly producing general cleaning products. The products are available in small cooperative shops, while from 2016 there is also an e-shop. Years now, there is a case about the auction of the land by the parent company of pre-2012 Diome. Until now, the auctions are blocked with hundreds of people in solidarity. About the power cutoff. They are taking advantage of curfew to cut off the power in the factory of Vome. Armed men in uniforms are walking around in the night during curfew and they suppress. What does it remind us? In Monday 21st of March and before the day dawns at 6:30 a.m., the government ordered a crew from the Public Power Corporation to cut off the power. Alongside, cops to protect them in order to give an end to any struggle. From the beginning, they knew that a curfew applies less to some people than others. If the workers of Vome were gathered to protest now, they will be illegal, but the cops and some willing workers of the Public Power Corporation can gather in order to cut the power. They cut off the power, arguing that the workers are running illegally. This is the crime that they were committing the last few weeks during the pandemic. They were producing soaps to send them in Moria, to people they don't have. They were producing cleaners to send them to prisons, with the states left vulnerable to the pandemic. And of course, they continue producing cleaners for the working class families who don't have the luxury to be protected from the virus, because they must go to work in crowded workplaces to make profit for the rich. There is a common denominator here. The right for them is to stay home unless if one has to make profit for them. Stay home unless if we don't have one and we are living in detention centers. For the states and the employees, there is no profit if you take care of the employee, the refugee, the prisoner. This is why they are leaving them vulnerable to the pandemic. But regarding collective struggles, curfew is an inviolable rule. The states want to shut down the factory, stop a production unit that produces cleaners during coronavirus. The state orders the shutdown of a factory that makes all the sanitary measures while they let the big companies operate uncontrollable. It's not the first time they try to cut off the power of the factory. The previous governments tried the same. All this while the workers were suggesting to make an arrangement so they can pay for the power they were consuming. We understand why they arranged it during the night, because when the lights started to come up, a storm of solidarity came. People from all around the world are determined to support our struggle. They translate and share our manifests. They ask for our products. Viomé won't stand down for some power cables. The solidarity of the people already gave us an electricity generator, and the factory is running again. They are starting producing, and they are preparing the restoration of power with every means available. Viomé will remain in the workers' hands.
You're listening to another segment of the UK edition of Bad News, and this episode will be a little bit exceptional given that the UK is in the midst of a crisis. The crisis was ongoing but tipped over the edge by the nudge given to it by the coronavirus. Many listeners would agree that this crisis has been ongoing for many years, not the coronavirus, but the crisis of the destruction of society, the environment, chronically and cruelly underfunding public services, forcing people and keeping them in poverty, imposing violence through prejudice, crises we can blame on the neoliberal politicians that think they have legitimacy to lead, when they're actually completely illegitimate and utterly incompetent. These illegitimate and incompetent leaders are yet again imposing their ideologies in this coronavirus crisis, and their ideologies are killing people, keeping them incarcerated in shitty prisons, leaving many across the nation with the scary prospect of mounting financial debts, no livelihood, no security, ignoring the plight of the homeless, racializing the virus, blaming the pandemic on China, giving confusing public health statements, bringing in the police to impose law and order in ridiculously inconsistent ways, all while making themselves and their friends, for instance in the airlines industry, ever richer and more powerful. Same shit, different day, you say? Perhaps. But some might say that the coronavirus has made the situation in the UK much, much worse, much more precarious, and life is just going to become untenable for people across the country. The light is really shining through the cracks of this so-called capitalist democracy. But it's not all doom and gloom. There has been an outpouring of support and action across the nation. Mutual aid groups, food banks, support networks, and communities are coming together and strengthening. People are working together creatively, sharing ideas, art, food, money, loo roll. For the remainder of this segment of Bad News, I'll be reading from a recent article from Freedom News, which covers the state of housing, one of the biggest and most ongoing issues in the UK, and discussing various forms and developments related to the coronavirus. Up until this moment, the government had promised a 3-month breather for mortgage repayments, and then, under pressure, caved and stated that tenants who failed to pay rent will be protected from eviction for the next 3 months. This does not mean a lot in practice, as the rent still needs to be paid, and agreements for doing so settled upon. Under a regular Section 8 eviction for renters, there is a 2-month notice period anyway. So the Coronavirus Act of 2020 only grants a further 4 weeks' notice. This still leaves many in hugely stressful positions, knowing that come the end of this grace period, there will be a lot of landlords looking to make up for lost time and pursuing possession orders. A leak from a property management company to the newspapers also showed that owners were also keen to push through as many rental evictions as possible before it became too difficult to do so, and as a result, were hiring more and more bailiffs to carry out the evictions before total lockdown. Bailiffs are not known for their empathy, and across the nation, evictions took place with those executing them happy to remove people from their homes while wearing protective face masks and rubber gloves. However, as of March 27th, under the instruction of the Master of the Rolls, a new civil procedure rule was brought into place. Practice Direction 51Z. PD51Z came in with immediate effect, putting a 90-day stay on all possession proceedings, seemingly including squatting cases, as they are somewhat inseparable from other trespassing cases. The question still remains as to whether a writ that has already been issued in the High Court can still be enforced by the bailiff companies. The High Court Enforcement Officers Association believe they can. On top of this, there is the risk that without a legal framework in place, there is the possibility of a rise in illegal evictions as landlords take matters into their own hands. One person in an organizing WhatsApp chat has already had the locks changed on them. And for those who are sleeping in the street, new instruction from central government on the same day was that all local councils were to take responsibility for housing every rough sleeper in their borough, whether in hostels, hotels, or night shelters. This request came without any guarantee of funding or reimbursement. With some night shelters closing down due to their communal nature, and therefore risk of contracting the virus, the council would be left to financially convince hotels and the like to remain open. Previously, grassroots organizations managed to wrangle beds for rough sleepers in the Islington borough, but the reality is, having spoken with some people working with them, that with lack of access to funds, a lot of the people offered places just ended up back on the streets anyway, as that is what is familiar to them, and it's how people get money. Presumably, the same issues will arise in simply ordering that every homeless person be housed this weekend. Without addressing the wider issues, it fails to actually solve the problem. So we are left with a situation that has some promise of safety and security for the crisis period, but let's not give credit to the government who only took these certain steps after massive pressure from the public. It all leaves a lot to be desired. Rent arrears, illegal evictions, and continued homelessness. What can be done then, or is being done? Across the country, mutual aid groups have sprung up to coordinate assistance between neighborhoods during this time. Some groups have been procuring items for NHS workers, others for those in isolation or who are sleeping rough and don't have access to necessary goods. The London Renters Union is organizing to provide support and build pressure to have rents frozen. A separate affiliation of anarchist groups have pushed for a rent strike in London. Apologies for the London-centric information. There are mutual groups organizing rent strikes in areas across the country. Joining these groups and their actions is important, but organizing with your local housing community is also just as important, as these things can only work with a reliance on the people around us. Shelter, that's a UK charity, has provided good guidance on housing rights during this period, and it's definitely worth a read if you're interested. With the 90-day break on eviction proceedings, squatters are looking to open up more buildings in the hope that they can be used to house safely those that need to isolate more extremely during this period, whether from other squats or people who are street homeless. The important thing that we must take from all of this is that we can't just write this off as a crisis to be recovered from, to get back to normal. The system is broken and we need to create new ways of living and of fighting. In 3 months' time, we don't want everyone to face an inevitability of mass evictions as landlords seek to make up for lost time and money. We must build strong relationships with people in our local communities, create and strengthen networks to resist evictions, and move forward with a conviction that all should be housed, including the homeless. And that's it for this month's UK segment of Bad News. Many thanks to Freedom News for the article that made this segment possible. I'm Chickpea from Dissident Island Radio, a radical radio show based in the capital, London, in the greater so-called kingdom of a not-really-united post-Brexit corona crisis-consumed Britain. That includes that north bit of Ireland and Scotland and Wales, etc., 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 at least at the time of recording. And whether or not you're in lockdown, you should definitely check out Dissident Island radio shows. They feature interviews on radical campaigns, direct action, we have political discussions, host a regular spot featuring our comrade Legal Andy, who enthralls us with bundles of legal information educational nonsense. And of course, we always find time for plenty of awesome music. You can try and navigate our amazingly craptastic website, that's at dissidentisland.org, or otherwise find us on slimy corporate social media sites by searching for Dissident Island, and that's spelled D-I-S-S-I-D-E-N-T, like the kind of person you probably are, and Island, I-S-L-A-N-D, as in, no person is an island. And you might even be able to find and add us to your favorite mobile or web podcast app by searching for Dissident Island in the app itself. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay sane, and take care of each other, comrades. Until next time.
Hello, everybody. Our contribution in this month will report about solidarity during the COVID-19 crisis from Dresden, Germany. For sure, in a lot of places on that world, similar things are happening on a regular basis since many years. But here, in one of Europe's richest countries, it wasn't that common so far. Capitalism is losing its mask at several places around here. The so-called welfare state is showing its teeth at first to the poorest. We are quite happy that the first paralysis seems to be over, and also anarchists are writing a lot of texts about the crisis. Take part in campaigns like organizing solidarity with refugees, for example, in Greece, campaigns about housing issues for homeless people, and not at least organize solidarity in their own neighborhood, like you can listen to in our following interview, which is a little example of it.
Hello. All over Germany, different kind of initiatives were organized to show solidarity during pandemic and limitations of social life. For example, Anarchist Network Dresden launched a neighborhood campaign with the motto Solidarity Not Charity. Can you tell us about your initiative, how you came to the idea, and what exactly you do?
Okay, hello. So what are we doing and how did we come here? To make it a little bit kind of a background story, actually in Dresden, the neighborhood initiatives appeared earlier than we started. So there were several people, not only political, but also just normal people who would get together and start organizing in the neighborhoods to bring some help to the people. However, actually, a lot of people seem to be doing all right in most of the neighborhoods, or didn't require help for quite a while. So people try to push forward, actually, and be more proactive in helping out, especially like people in hard economical conditions or people who don't have a permanent place to live. So for that, there was even like a given fences organized. So it's like a fence where there was some things hanging that the people can come and take the bags with food, the idea was. However, when we went there, we saw that it was super messy. I mean, in Germany, there is this tendency to put all your things outside, old things, not all your things, but old things outside that you find in your cellar. And that's what the people were doing. So instead of bringing things that the people need, they were bringing the things that they don't need. And it turned into a huge mess. And we started discussing how can it be arranged in a more direct way. So how can we actually help the people directly? And one of the places that was giving the food to the people on the daily basis, to those who are in harsh economical conditions, is this kind of like soup kitchens that are existing in Dresden in several districts. And we went there and said, okay, what is going on here? How is it working for you to work with the people and so on and so forth? And they said that, okay, actually people that are coming have to pay some money, like from, I think, 1.5 to 3 euros. They also have to show their papers that they are in some kind of economical hardships that are given by some authorities. And we said, as one of the options, we could, you know, bring like this smaller bags with the food for the day that the people don't have to pay for. So they just come and take it and get it for free. And the people from the soup kitchen were also pretty amazed about the idea. So this actually started happening. And right now it happens on a regular basis with like several times per week. We do, I mean, it's not super big. It's not like we're helping thousands of people. It's just preparing maybe 15, 20 bags, which is also not a lot of work. So everybody can do that. And actually we got some people who were not involved in the anarchist network or some kind of anarchist organizing, who also started doing that. So they also find the idea great, and somehow it works. And I mean, for us, it was important also to stress the political part of it, because for a lot of people, it is actually some kind of a charity concept. But for us, it's basically a failing state. I mean, in Germany, the social democratic perspective, or like the state perspective in the society, is pretty strong. And people believe that they can rely on state in many cases. But for us, this lockdown shows that actually the state is failing. It cannot perform its basic functions or whatever, or it doesn't want to prioritize to something else. And we showed that through kind of a direct action, through smaller acts of solidarity, we can go through these hard times and still stay humans.
And how long it's already existing? How long are you doing it?
We started, I think, 2 weeks ago on Friday. So like 1.5 weeks ago. Last week it was, I think, also only one day, because there was this Friday Easter holidays, and today is also a holiday, and there were a lot of holidays where this soup kitchen is not working. And that's why we are actually discussing other forms of, well, helping out people if there is need.
Cool. And what are your so-called, I don't know, security measures, standards due to the virus, how you deal with it?
Security measures. I mean, we prepare the food in gloves and masks, and wash our hands and try to be healthy. I mean, the people who are actually preparing, they're supposed to be healthy. And if they're not, they should stay away. So basic like hygienic standards plus masks and gloves, and packing everything also nicely without touching noses and shit.
If the people want to join, what should they do? They can just organize themselves, or
they can write us if they want to organize with us in our neighborhood, like in Dresden Neustadt. Or they can just start doing it by themselves in their neighborhoods. You can go to your local soup kitchen distributions. You can also talk to the people on the streets directly who you know that are in need, and tell them, hey, we can organize it in some way. You can actually, like some people I've seen in US did, also doing this food bags and distributing it directly. So making it and going on the streets and giving it to the people who are, for example, sitting in front of the supermarkets and collecting money, or people in need, so to say. I mean, there are also in your cities, most probably the places for the homeless people to sleep over for a night or things like that. Those are the places where you can go directly. There is also an idea right now to work a little bit more with the people who are getting the methadone, like the drug places where you get the drug shots officially. Go to those places and also start figuring out if those people also need help.
Thank you, and good luck, and stay healthy.
You too. You too.
Hey, hope you all are fine. In Greece, the state has used coronavirus to experiment with various methods of martial law and social control. The police are running around the streets like it's a holiday for them, or a reminder of the good days under the junta, dictatorship. It's hard to focus on much more than the measures taken around the coronavirus, but many measures have an array of political implications for our movement and social struggles in the region. For one, the refugee situation was already building up due to opportunistic pressure by the Turkish state of sending desperate refugees across the Greek border. Refugees who faced attack both on the Turkish and Greek side. The reactionary response by the Greek police and border control has been overlooked by many due to the virus. However, lost in the headlines of world news, the measures being taken to deal with refugees has been largely celebrated by fascists, patriots, and those wishing for a passive genocide of refugees. The Greek state is trying to contain refugees inside delegated camps that have no ability to stay hygienic, socially distance, and also have cases of COVID already that many have come to see as death zones or ghettos of containment. Additionally, new measures are going into place to create new refugee camps on the mainland in order to isolate refugees and create what many have said are mass petri dishes of infection and death. Hiding behind the reputation as being overwhelmed and underfunded, the Greek state has sent MAT and various police to islands and refugee camps to enforce lockdown and contain refugees fighting for their survival and safety during this pandemic, while they are forced inside fences that are now deemed as containment zones of death for those deemed as expendable by the Greek state and its patriot fascist followers. On Thursday, April 9th, an uprising broke out in the women's prisons of Eleonas, Thebes, which was triggered by the death of the detained Azizel Deniroglu. Her death may have been caused by coronavirus because she suffered from fever, shortness of breath, and a severe cough in the past few days. Calls for early release or new measures in safety and protections are being demanded by the prisoners, as they are by prisoners across the world. In line with the demands of refugees left to die, prisoners are facing the same circumstances and status enforced upon them by the state, which deems them expendable. Additionally, a call for urgent solidarity and funds have been made by the anarchist prisoner support group TAMIO, a solidarity fund for anarchist prisoners and persecuted fighters. As their funding since their beginning in 2010 mostly consists of money made from donations inside of cash boxes at social and political centers, as well as fundraising parties and similar events, a serious lack of money have been received by the group due to the lockdown measures. With this, serious support efforts have been disrupted by the lockdown in terms of anti-repression support, court fees, legal aid, and specifically the 24 prisoners supported on a monthly basis by the fund. They can be contacted for further information on showing support via email at tamio@spiv.net. New efforts by anarchist teams, squads and other groups in mutual aid and disaster relief that is independent of the state have gone into effect, using the excuse of helping those in need, one of the reasons we're able to go outdoors, many of these projects and programs are able to function. However, many of these groups and spaces hosting these efforts have faced relentless police harassment and intimidation just for trying to coordinate food pickup and deliveries to those in need. Even with the repression and intimidation of the goon police in the streets of Greece, many solidarity actions have happened with medical workers, prisoners, and refugees by the movement. It is a scary time, but inspiring that even among the circumstances, our movement remains firmly visible amidst a huge campaign of revolutionary graffiti and banners across the country. Cops have also used the coronavirus to swarm Exarchia and terrorize its residents. Lockdown measures stopping those outside and ticketing for fabricated violations have been significantly harsher in Exarchia in order to terrorize the neighborhood during this already unprecedented pandemic. Residents and those inside squatted spaces have claimed relentless harassment. Additionally, the police units typically used to attack the anarchist movement known as MAT and Delta have set up checkpoints and occupations across Exarchia, claiming the neighborhood as it was once known will never return. The state has done everything it can to try and encourage the public to take the blame if social distancing efforts are to fail. Fabricated videos of people not respecting social distance have been spread by the media and state in order to turn the Greek society against itself. Additionally, the Greek state is using this pandemic to experiment in martial law and even enforcing provisions and laws such as no swimming for those able to or need to due to medical reasons. It is thought that these measures are ways of testing the patience and obedience of the people. Cops are also ticketing homeless people for violating the lockdown, for not having shelter, ticketing immigrants and trying to attack the most vulnerable under the guise of measures in safety. The Greek state has also tried to evacuate student houses across the city of Athens. They are also using the text message system in place for residents seeking permission to go outside to collect information on the general population. The fucking state that has slashed funding for medical facilities and increased the privatization of healthcare is choosing a route of increased state control and social manipulation to deal with this crisis. Even as some workers at the Evangelismos Hospital in central Athens tried to stage a demonstration demanding more protection, an army of closely handled police goons swarmed the gathering of doctors to shut it down. Beyond these types of direct assaults on medical staff by the Greek state, medical workers have also been told that they are unable to complain or report on publicly any information on COVID-related issues to the press. The lockdown is extended to April 27th. There is so much happening even among this bitter, stagnant lockdown. It is hard to easily report it all. As the failures of the state and capitalism become more and more apparent by the general population, we anticipate an eruption of future unrest. While these are scary times, the movement here is very much alive and prepared to return to the streets as soon as possible.